Yeah.
It's nicer for me. Because I take my kids to school at 8:30 every day.
Oh,
And so
yeah.
morning meetings are not fun for me. I got it at 8:30 for an 8 o'clock conference call today for work, and they ended at like 8:25. I'm like, all right, let's go. Perhaps be back tax
All right.
and make the
Folks,
walk.
I think I'm going to call the meeting to order. It's noon.
Okay.
I'm at a prescribed location in Santa Ana. Enjoy my lunch, but enjoy my lunch, by the way. I will ask the clerk to call the roll.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Tran. Director Tran.
Great.
Director Yeo.
Am here.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Sheldon. Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Green,
Here.
you do have a quorum of your committee.
Great. Are there any items received too late to be agendized, Mr. Kennedy?
There are none.
Great. Is there any visitor participation at this time? Seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar, which consists of the meeting minutes. Is there a motion to accept the consent to accept the meeting minutes?
I'll make that motion. I move to approve.
Okay, we have a motion and a
Yeah,
second, and
that
I will
one
ask the
screws me
clerk
up.
to, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Don't do
Director
it.
Tran.
Don't kill me. Gotta work with
Yeah.
that. You actually
Director
have to
Yeo.
justify what you're exhausted
Yes.
tonight, so you
Director
can sit.
Whitaker.
Oh, go
Aye.
home.
Director Mesqua.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Great. That brings us to matters for consideration. First off, we're going to have the state legislative update. And I will ask
Oh, I
Mr.
wouldn't drink one.
Dufalbus to perhaps lead us off.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning, and members of the committee. Just a quick update for everyone. So the legislature returned from their week-long spring recess to a very busy Capitol on April 1st. And April is typically a very busy month around here in the Capitol. Not only are there 2,300 plus bills that have to meet legislative deadlines this month, or I should say last month, but the legislature and governor also took steps to address part of this year's massive budget deficit. So, as we know, California's facing a significant budget deficit. The highly respected nonpartisan legislative analyst office projected back in January about a $58 billion budget deficit, which has now been projected to grow by $15 billion to about $73 billion as of this month, the month of May. However, the governor's January budget proposal projected only a $38 billion budget deficit. So what's 38 to 73 billion difference? Either way, we're facing a significant budget deficit. And in an effort to take early action on the budget this year, back on April 11th, the legislature passed AB 106, which is a budget bill that reflects the quote-unquote early action budget agreement announced by the governor and the legislative leaders at the beginning of April. And that's expected to reduce the shortfall by about 17, a little over $17 billion. So AB 106, as part of that agreement, contains a mix of about $3.6 billion in reductions, primarily to one-time funding. There's $5.2 billion in revenue and borrowing. There's $5.2 billion in delays and defers, and another about $3.4 billion in shifts of costs from the general fund to other state funds, such as the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. And although the agreement addresses about $17 billion of the budget shortfall, it's also pushing the more challenging fiscal decisions that they're going to have to make for later this summer when lawmakers have a more complete budget picture. According to the governor's office and legislative leaders, the $17 billion in early actions, coupled with about $12 billion in rainy day reserves, will bring the remaining deficit to anywhere between $8.5 to $23.5 billion that they still have to address. The governor is expected to release his May revise to the budget late next week, and then the legislature will have until June 15th to send the governor their final budget bill, or they forfeit their pay. And that's just the main budget bill. We'll probably see another 20 or so budget trailer bills that will continue after June and well into August is what we expect. So as always, we will continue to keep you guys apprised on the actions on and the progress on the budget. And Mr. Chair, that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for Paul? Okay. Seeing none, I'll turn it over to Mr. Gilbert and Eichert.
Thank you, Director Bilodeau, and good afternoon, directors. I think the other item that we have for you on the agenda is AB 2515 by Assemblymember Pappin. As a reminder, this is a bill that you all discussed last month at your Comledge meeting that bans menstrual products containing PFAS and has some civil penalties associated with that ban and a private right of action. We were asked to simply give an update on status and a little bit more intelligence on the bill politically. So it's had two hearings since you last met. On April 9th, the Assembly Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials Committee heard the bill and passed it on a party line vote with the committee's Democrats passing it and the committee's Republicans abstaining from the bill. It had another hearing subsequently on April 16th in the Assembly Judiciary Committee. That vote was slightly different. Again, the Assembly's Democrats voted in favor of the bill. However, in this case, one Republican, Assemblymember Dixon, chose to vote no. And I'm going to pause there and hand the mic back to Paul briefly because he has some intelligence on why the Assemblymember was inclined to vote no.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. So I spoke with Hannah Skaggs in Assemblymember Dixon's office, and Hannah shared with me that really there was two major concerns that they had. One, there's a large coalition opposed to the bill: the California Manufacturers Technologies Association, American Forest and Paper Association, the American Chemistry Council, Cal Chamber, Center for Baby and Adult Hygiene Products, Consumer Brand Association, the Civil Justice Association of California, and the Consumer Healthcare Products Association. So they all came out opposed to the bill. And I should preface this by saying Assemblymember Dixon did vote to support, I believe it was AB 246 last year by Assemblymember Pappin. That was a very similar bill that did not include the private right of action. That bill was vetoed by the governor. But that was the bill that was supported by Assemblymember Dixon. Unfortunately, for Assemblymember and for as from Assemblymember Dixon's perspective, the current bill includes the private right of action, which she's highly opposed to, and afraid that's going to lead to frivolous lawsuits. And then she also had concerns over what constitutes a violation under the law. So they were concerned about oversight and the private right of action and the coalition opposition, which is why she chose to vote no on the bill.
And we're happy to continue with the update unless you'd like to start with questions from Director Tran. Just wanted to pause. So
Thank you,
I'll
Jason.
defer to you all.
Yeah, it looks like Director Tran has his hand up. Why don't we go to
Yeah,
Director Tran?
I have a question. Last year, the governor, you said, vetoed the bill. What was his reason for vetoing the bill, and what's the prospects of him vetoing the bill again this year? Given that it's even more extreme this year with the private right of action, in my opinion.
You actually teed us up perfectly on kind of continuing the update because yeah, so his reasoning was essentially that single chemical bans that have always been popular in the legislature in the Democratic caucus are often difficult to enforce because we don't identify an enforcement agency. We add civil penalties, but it's down to city attorneys and others in public legal offices to enforce those bans, and with their limited resources, they don't always do so. So the governor vetoed a number of bills saying that an entity is needed to essentially enforce it, the most obvious entity being the Department of Toxic Substances Control. So this year's bill gives the department authority to regulate in this space and to enforce the ban. The problem that creates for the bill, Director Tran, is that it creates a $1.5 million cost. And that's incredibly significant in a year where you just heard Paul describe our massive budget deficit. And so the bill where it's currently at, it's in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. That is the fiscal committee. It's on what we call the suspense file. This is where any bill with a significant cost goes so that the committee can make a determination about whether it's going to move forward or not. That hearing will come on or very near to May 17th, which is the deadline for bills to pass out of that committee. So it will be a steep road. It's not impossible for the assembly member to get the bill out of the Appropriations Committee in the assembly. She is an assembly member. If it's a high priority of hers, she may be able to do that. But it will have a very significant challenge in the Senate when it goes to that Appropriations Committee, or when the governor has to consider it. Because again, with as significant of a budget deficit as we're facing today and in the coming years, any bill with this kind of cost is going to have a hard time. So that's kind of the overall on the status of the bill and kind of, you know, what its biggest challenge is really, which is cost.
If I may follow up.
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Aside from the fiscal impact on the bill, would the governor still have the argument, the regulatory argument to veto the bill, or the Toxic Control Department already resolved that issue for him?
So we have not had a direct conversation with the governor's staff on that and doubt they would be inclined to tell us exactly where he would be anyways. But at any rate, it does seem to resolve the concern that he put in writing last year, you know, which is, again, there wasn't an enforcement agency. This bill has DTSC, the Department of Toxic Substances Control, as that enforcement agency. But again, solving that problem creates a new one in terms of cost.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Great. You know, I want to thank Director Wigand for pulling this initially and alerting us that there is some many points of view on this bill. And it kind of seems to me that but for the word PFAS being in this bill, we wouldn't have any concern with it. We'd just take a pass. And maybe that's the direction we should take given the complex issues that are at play here. Does anybody else have an opinion about that? Eric?
Just one, if the author isn't really asking us to do anything, I think we can just do nothing and move along, and we don't have to take an action whatsoever. You know, just unless we get the author coming to us saying, "Hey," then we can have that discussion again if they do. But if not, then we just let it fall out.
Okay.
I do have, if I may, gotta raise my hand.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Going forward on bills, and this I should have spoken a lot earlier on this. With every bill that we may have a say in or would like to have a say in, I know that there will be a lot of associations and interests, different interests, either supporting or opposing the bill. And some of the bills may have neither, you know, non-controversial, but many of the bills will have forces behind them and also against them. I would like if our consultants can let us know on some of these substantive bills, who's supporting and who's opposing, so that we can have a general idea where it's going and why it's being opposed or why it's being supported. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes, because many of these, based on my experience, a lot of these supporters and opponents of specific bills from the lawmakers have very, very detailed and very thought out, clearly thought out analysis and positions. And it would behoove us, and it would be good for us to also rely on their reference, on their rationale as well, for or against. To make our own decision.
Director Tran, we can definitely do that going forward.
That would be good, so that we're
Don't
not
you
going blindly.
already have that from Aqua? You're on state ledge
We do,
on
but
the bills.
I'm talking about some of the bills Even with Aqua, there's not a list, and I'm not sure why, list of supporters and opponents. With all these bill analysis, the legislature does a very good job of listing all the letters and all the comments for or against every specific bills, if they have something to say about it.
Wow, I usually see that in the Aqua write-ups. Maybe I get a different write-up than you. I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't seen any. So, for our committee and for our board, that would be helpful if the staff is asking for us to take a formal position on this. It would be very helpful.
And usually the staff of the legislature will put together a fact sheet on that specific bill, and in it will say who they've already lined up as supporters or if there's a group asking them to run the bill. So it just, if we have that highlighted in our briefing on these committees, then we'll kind of know where they're going with it.
That's right.
Okay. So given all that, I think that we should just take a pass and take no action on this particular bill. Would someone like to make a motion to that effect?
Yeah, I will make. I will take a motion. I will make a motion to recommend a no. I believe we have a position on this already. No, opposed unless amended. If my memory serves me correctly.
I'll second.
We have no position on it. We were going to take a position, then we pulled out.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll make the motion opposed unless amended.
All right, I'll second that as well.
Why, if you're going to pass on it and you're not going to, why are you taking an action?
Yeah, I think Director Tran, maybe we just let it just kind of fall off. By taking no action whatsoever. And then that way we're not sending an insult to the author. We're not getting involved with it by saying we want to take a stance one way or the other. We're just letting it just kind of fall away here without any rumblings.
Right. I mean, if that's the committee's preference, but keep in mind the consequences of the private right of action, because we may be named the defendant in this. Okay, if it passes into law, we may be a defendant. So we can pass it, but that's where we are. But we may be named as a defendant.
Well, we don't manufacture these products, though.
Well, we're part of the water stream of producing or passing on the water stream.
I, of course, would always defer to your counsel because I am not an attorney. But, yes, I believe that the provisions of the bill do only apply to people selling menstrual products that contain PFAS. But, again, I would defer to your counsel on that.
I guess seeing that could be or couldn't be an issue, maybe we'll just could continue it until we get – Jeremy to review it, and then that way we can be certain that Director Tran's thoughts are satisfied before we take a complete stance to either say no unless amended or otherwise just let it fall off to the wayside here and have no discussion.
Yeah, but we'll do that.
Okay. I think that would cover Director Tran's concerns, and then maybe just
continue. I would agree. I would concur with that. So I'll withdraw my motion if it does not affect us as a potential defendant, then it has very little, if anything, to do with our agency. Then we can take a pass. But if it does, then I believe and I'll advocate for a position.
And I would join you on that.
Sure,
I think we all would. Yeah.
Okay. Then I think. Do you need a formal vote on that, Gina, or is that direction good enough?
We're good, Mr.
That's
Chair.
Good. Yes,
okay,
thank
perfect.
You.
Okay. Then is there anything else with the state legislative report before we move on? Mr. Gilbert, do you want to enlighten us with anything?
No, I
I'm overwhelmingly enlightened by Jason myself, so I'm good.
Great. Okay. Then I think we'll move on to the federal legislative update. Mr. Saperstein.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Couple of items for you. I'm going off script, Gina, for 1 second. I just got a blurb or alert that the Cyber Infrastructure Security Administration, which is part of DHS, just issued an advisory that Russian hackers are redoubling their efforts to hack into water treatment systems. So you may see that in the papers in the coming days. Going back on script, PFAS legislative update. So we are still, it's like Groundhog Day, we're still in the Senate watching the Democratic staff trying to come to terms and thread the needle and come up with some kind of liability protections for the water sector, among others. Fortunately, ranking Republican member Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia is consistent in her position that there will be no PFAS legislation unless they deal with liability protections for the water sector, among others. So we're waiting in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, that the Democratic staff will pass over to the Republican staff on the Committee on Environment and Public Works their preferred approach to doing some kind of liability exemption. In the House, we now have a piece of legislation that I believe is on the agenda today, H.R. 7944, sponsored by Representative Curtis of Utah and a member, Democratic member from Washington State, Perez. Bipartisan bill, essentially it is the companion bill to the previously introduced Senate Bill 1430 that would explicitly give liability protection to the water sector under CERCLA. The message that I'd leave with you on the House bill is that it isn't going to go anywhere in the near term. What's the value of it is that we now have a marker in the House for the first time for liability exemptions or protections for the water sector. Should the Senate do anything in the coming months, which we are hopeful they will, that we can point to the House bill if there are problems with the Senate bill relative to any kind of negotiations. I'd also say on PFAS legislative front, there's something called the FAA reauthorization, the Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization. In the past, there have been efforts to deal with PFAS liability in that bill. As of today, the compromise legislation that is going through the Senate and through the House does not contain any kind of language that would impact liability, which is a good thing for us because in the past they've tried to impose liability through that bill. The only thing that's in that bill is funding for firefighting foam replacements, substitutes, developing those. I'd also say on the liability front, interesting twist. EPA did designate hazardous substances finally on April 19th under CERCLA, PFAS, PFOA, PFAS. And since that happened on April 19th, your friends at the Army Corps of Engineers have announced that they are very concerned that we'll not be able to do dredging because they believe that the dredge material will have PFAS in it. And since it is now a hazardous substance, they don't know where they're going to how they're going to dispose of this dredge material if it has PFAS in it. Is it whether or not it's a real issue of concern remains to be seen, but it points to the unintended consequences of designating these substances as hazardous substances or these chemicals as hazardous substances under CERCLA and helps the effort to carve out some kind of exemption for passive receivers like the water district. So that's where we are in legislation. Again, as I've said in the past updates, we're still looking at a lame duck session, most likely, where any final resolution of this will happen. Turning attention to some of the rulemakings outside of the substance issue. MCL, as you know, April 12th, I believe, the agency issued its final standard for PFAS, 4 parts per trillion under drinking water. That rule is effective in the following manner. Next 3 years, agencies will be requested to monitor and determine what the loadings are in their water supply systems. If they find that their water supply is contaminated above the 4 parts per trillion over the next 3 years, then they will have another 2 years to comply with the drinking water treatment standard of 4 parts per trillion. So if you're saying how long do we really have to comply, it's an outward number of about 5 years. I think the other thing with the MCL standard, I fully expect somebody's going to litigate this standard based on the fact that there's a question about how EPA came to decide that the benefits outweighed the costs of the rulemaking. EPA basically says that the rule will cost somewhere around $1.4 billion annually for compliance. What the Conference of Mayors specifically has found is that EPA reached their economic analysis that showed the benefits exceeded the cost of that $1.4 billion because of the extra money the federal government is kicking in to deal with PFAS contamination. The only problem is what they've discovered is the agency may have triple counted that federal assistance. So they used it to define benefits supported with PFAS, benefits supported through lead removal and general upgrade of infrastructure, drinking water infrastructure in general. So the agency, if in fact this is shown to be true, the agency is going to have to account for the fact that maybe their cost-benefit analysis isn't accurate and the rule that was developed doesn't withstand the test of analysis that this is justified under the economics criterion of the Safe Drinking Water Act. I have to wait and see, but we fully expect there's going to be some kind of litigation in the next coming months' time with respect to agencies or associations like AWWA and others who will say that you just can't comply with this rule the way the costs total out. One other thing that went on in the past couple of months or weeks, over the last month or so, EPA also issued guidance on destruction and treatment technologies for PFAS. It's only guidance because the agency does not want to get out in front of industry with respect to what's available to be used to treat or destroy PFAS. Interestingly, though, what the agency did say in this destruction guidance is that they look at landfilling, incineration, and deep well injection as opportunities to deal with PFAS. What they don't talk about is the costs associated with those technologies to destroy or to treat the PFAS. So basically, the agency's taken a walk, if you will, going to leave it up to industry to find solutions to treat PFAS, and they are not going to mandate the type of technologies that should be employed to deal with PFAS. So that's where we are on the rulemaking efforts. More to probably come in the next couple of months with respect to interpreting how you will comply with any and all of these measures. Turning attention to the community project requests. If I am correct, Alicia and Gina, the district has successfully submitted all of its funding requests to the delegation for fiscal year 25. As of this week, the Committee on Appropriations in the House finally issued their guidance to the congressional offices to get their information into the committee for consideration. The deadline for that to be done is over the next week to 2 weeks' time, depending on the appropriations bills. The request that the district put in is for the EPA spending bill, known as Interior and Environment, and that will be probably the doors will close on requests over the next week's time. And then the committees will proceed to, the subcommittees will proceed to consider what projects will be or will not be supported in a final spending bill in the House. Same process is going forward in the Senate. I will say there is one fly in the ointment, and that is, there's a group called the Council on Infrastructure Financing Agencies, and that is the association that represents all the state SRF program officers across the country, basically like the Water Board in California. They have put out a pledge that are asking people to sign. If it comes your way, I will be making a recommendation that you do not sign it. The pledge basically says, fully fund the SRF program and stop earmarking the program because that takes away the state purchasing power of the SRF to fund water infrastructure. The challenge is that, like Willie Sutton, when they asked him, why you rob banks? And his response was, that's where the money is. Well, in this case, the money is in the SRF program. There's nowhere else for earmarks to be provided through in a meaningful way in any other program at EPA. And that's why Congress earmarks it. So if, in fact, the agency, the district was to say, oh, we'll sign this pledge. It's a great idea to have infrastructure money. Yeah, of course. What will happen is that the committees will look at who's signing this pledge and say, oh, wait a second. They've asked for funding through their member. Now they're saying don't fund earmarks. What gives here? So that's why I would recommend that if you get this request to sign the pledge, and it's going around right now, do not consider it as a harmless little endeavor.
Eric, can I ask you a quick question on, we were in a meeting the other day and it came up that there is a new rule that if you have federal monies in the state and have not spent them, they are absolutely stopped. You cannot spend them or access them. Do you know what that's about and what that rule is?
So this was a state meeting?
Where was that?
That was in MODOC. Their lobbyists said that.
Yeah.
That there was an expiration date on the federal money. And if you had not spent it, then you were going to lose it. But I forget what program they were talking about.
But we couldn't tell whether it was the agencies who got the money or the state who got the federal money that this applied to.
So, Director Green, I will research that. But the last time we looked at earmarks, that's an act of Congress, and they can't take that money away. Once it's given to you, that's your money. In order to take it back, they'd have to have an act of Congress essentially pulling the money back. Usually, you want to design for a worst-case scenario. I believe the state revolving loan fund monies are live for about 2 years. And then if the state doesn't commit the money, then they can try and pull that money back to the general fund or to reallocate it to other states that have exhausted their SRF allocation. But you've got an obligation to use the money on the PFAS cleanup, for example, that you should be good to go. I'll double check that. But last time, this was no year money, as we call it.
Okay.
I'll double check that.
I should have stopped it and asked the question at the time, but I didn't.
I'll follow up.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Because, you know, first of all, even if there were a time limit on it, that clock ticks upon your getting the money. It's not like they enacted the spending bill in March of this past year or this year. And so by March of next year, you've got to have it. No, because there's just several months lapse before they get the money out to you.
Well, like the SRF funds, you know, they've been sitting there for what, 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
They haven't even done anything. And so I was kind of worried that might affect those funds.
To belabor this point a little bit further, what was the subject matter? Do you recall of how this came up?
It was just a report by their federal lobbyists.
Yeah, it was kind of a general statement, and it didn't really refer to any specific program. Yeah. So we need to research it a little more on our side, Eric.
Yeah, I'll look into it too, John. But at this point, I would not lose sleep over it.
Thank you. I need my sleep.
last thing, and this was not on the script. The president issued a new cybersecurity policy, on the heels of what I started off this whole conversation with. And I have developed a summary that I don't think I flipped to you yet, Gina, and Alicia, but I will flip it to you after this. It's a 36-page document detailing how the federal government is going to work with stakeholders like yourself going forward to, shall we say, have a more robust cybersecurity endeavor across various critical infrastructure sectors, and that includes water and wastewater by definition at the federal level. There's nothing you need to know or do right now. You just need to know that there's a whole new bureaucratic process developing to deal with cybersecurity.
Okay. So we are being asked to take action on a bill, HR 7944. Do we want to discuss that? What do you think?
Is that me or is that Alicia?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's you specifically, but we do have it on the agenda to take a support position on AB 7944.
Eric, so that was the bill that you went over in the beginning. It mirrors the Loomis bill, which we already took a support. Do you want to just briefly recap?
Mm-hmm. So bottom line is this is a water sector only liability protection or exemption from CERCLA. Due to the designation of PFAS as a hazardous substance. It is simply related to PFAS, nothing more, nothing less. The second thing is it provides protection not only to the water sector, but also contractors. So if you had a situation where you had a contractor come in and they're doing work for you, they would be protected too. So that if, in fact, they got into trouble outside of gross negligence, they would not be subject to liability or what have you, and they couldn't come back to you as being a party to the whole effort. So bottom line is it's a good bill, and it's identical to the Loomis bill that you took a position on before, and it would give you, if enacted into law, total protection from frivolous litigation, be it third party or EPA sanctioned endeavors.
That sounds like a worthy bill to support. Would someone like to make a motion to that effect that we take a support position?
I move the recommendation.
Great. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Fantastic. We have an emotion and a second to support the bill. Madam Clerk, if you'll call the roll, please.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Tran? Is that a yes?
Yeah.
Director Tran? Yes, Director Tran?
Yeah.
Director Yeo?
I can hear you, yes.
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Mezqua?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Eric, for the update.
Thank you.
That'll bring us to the Water Summit update.
Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. Crystal Nettles will provide a brief update on where we are at with the Orange County Water Summit.
Sorry. There we go. Yeah. There we go. Thank you, Gina. So as she mentioned, here to just provide a brief update on the OC Water Summit. This year's summit will be our 16th year that we are planning in coordination with MODOC. We do switch off every year as who is leading the planning effort. And this year is MODOC's year. It will be held at the West End South Coast Plaza, and Fritz Coleman has confirmed his attendance or participation once again as Master of Ceremonies. So we're excited for that. The committee met on April 29th and did approve a theme of Liquid Logic, the fusion of finance, tech, and water. And we do continue to meet monthly to discuss the program and speakers. So as it stands right now, these are the proposed sessions as well as invitees. So first up, we have making water a priority at the federal level. So Senate candidate Steve Garvey has been invited, and he did come for a joint briefing as well as tour of the GWRS this Tuesday, which directors Green, Wigand, and Bilodeau attended. And Gina may get into more of that with her outreach presentation, but toward the end of the tour, I did ask his staff, regarding Summit and his availability. They were unsure really that far in advance what he would be doing, but did recommend us checking back in early August because they'd have a better idea of his schedule at that time. But if he was free, that he'd be able to attend. Adam Schiff was invited but declined. However, should Garvey state that he can come, we will extend that invitation once again to Adam Schiff. The second, I guess this is quite timely given Eric's update, cyber defense of Orange County's water infrastructure. So we wanted to take more of a global perspective, local perspective, and water perspective with Colonel John Harris, Alberto Martinez, and staff from Metropolitan. Sorry about that. Next up, financing the future of water, talking about how we're funding this infrastructure, whether it be through bond measure or some other means. So two speakers will be invited, James Sutton, an attorney from Rutan and Tucker. Director Sheldon actually touched base with him prior to the meeting, and he seemed very interested in attending, so that sounds promising. Conservation as the California way of life. During the meeting, we added a question mark to the end of that, given the regulations kind of moving forward, what our response will be. So to have Mark Eriks, who's a author and journalist on water, to kind of provide a historical overview as well as moderate the session. And then we do have the Public Policy Institute, as well as a farming perspective from Darcy Blair. And finally, the shift to clean energy. We may invite additional speakers. It wasn't completely fleshed out yet, so that may come back to the next meeting. But Director Bilodeau actually recommended Hector De La Torre, who's part of the California Air Resources Board. So we will be meeting again in May, hopefully having an update to see if any of these speakers have confirmed their attendance. And we'll be providing another update at the June meeting for you. Concludes my presentation. Happy to answer
any questions. Any questions for Crystal at this time? Let's see. I think you have to stop sharing. Or I can't see
anybody. Oh, you can't see. And there are no hands up.
Okay, no hands up. Okay, you don't have to stop sharing. okay, well, thank you. And yeah, we are making progress. And I think that the pressure's on me. Maybe I got to track down a Hector De La Torre. since I threw his name out, he was my high school classmate. So that'll bring us to the Public Affairs Outreach Report for April.
Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. I'll give a brief update on Public Affairs Outreach for the month of April. Oops, did it go away, Crystal?
Sorry about that. Oh, it like moved windows that aren't actually there. I'll use the arrows instead. Is it going? There we go. Apologies.
Okay. Thank you, Crystal. So for the month of April, community engagement at the district, we continue to offer a really robust speakers, bureau, and tour program. We really have seen an increase in tours, a lot more in-person tours. Still definitely have an appetite for some groups to do virtual, so we are doing both. We had 20 tours just in the month of April. We continue to have speakers bureaus, whether we're going out to civic organizations or have staff speaking on panels or keynoting at conferences. So that continues to be done as well. The district does continue to provide construction outreach notifications and information and respond to our hotline as well for any maintenance or construction projects. So right now we are supporting any PFAS projects as well as some of the maintenance projects like the Huntington Beach monitoring wells. For awards, we do continue to receive awards and apply for awards that are relevant to district programs to highlight them and highlight the district as leaders. We recently won an EPIC award from the California Association of Public Information Officers. So Crystal and Meta will be going to the CAPIO conference and receiving that. We received that award for planning and implementing the GWRS, the big event we had last April, commemorating the completion of the groundwater replenishment system.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And then digital communications as well. We got out our newsletter as well as two press releases and our PFAS quarterly update. Legislative engagement. Wanted to mention the meetings that took place in the month of April and upcoming. You'll see we had a meeting with Supervisor Doug Chafee. So John and the supervisor are featured there with President Green. And then we had the briefing mentioned by Crystal with Senate candidate Steve Garvey. For upcoming, we are working with Eric to plan a visit to Washington, D.C. at the end of this month. And that will be John, President Green, and Alicia going to do that and scheduling meetings with our delegation, also with the EPA, the Corps, to advocate for some of the district's priorities and, of course, PFAS funding. Media. So last month, we had a lower media reach. And this month, we had a lot of media coverage. So it really bumped up our numbers for media outreach. So you'll see here, we had 728.9 million global reach. And then we continued to get a lot of social media and website impressions due to that. And I think when we took a look at the numbers, you can move to the next slide, Crystal, we had like a 13,000 increase in media hits. And so this was largely due, you know, we got two press releases out, and due to the EPA release of the regulations, when we got our press release out, we got a lot of media inquiries regarding PFAS that John, Jason, or Chris Olson accommodated. It was also due to our news release about naming of our Prado Eagles, and then also regarding an award submission. So it was a good media month for the month of April. So here's some of the kind of clippings and outlets that featured the district. And then wanted to specifically mention the Prado Bald Eagle. So I think all of you saw we ran a campaign. It was conducted on social media. We also did an e-blast through Constant Contact. So it was a fun and I think popular naming contest for the eagles in Prado. So the winning names were excuse me, Lucy and Ricky, but this contest and the naming of the Prado Eagles and did get a lot of coverage as well. So it helped to boost our media hits. We received coverage on KTLA, ABC, Yahoo, and the OC Independent. So we will continue to see, you know, whether we can do a live cam with the Eagles in the fall, like is done in Big Bear. We'll continue to see what else we can do regarding this. It did get great exposure. And then on Tuesday, OCWD, along with other agencies, hosted an AQUA AWWA leadership reception where we honored Kathy Green, Heather Collins, and Ernie Avila. So AQUA and AWWA leaders, we had more than 110 individuals attend. They were elected members from Water District, City Council members, Assembly Member Dixon attended as well. So you see a couple of photos here featured, and then certificates of recognition were presented by some of the legislative offices and by Metropolitan as well. So you'll see Chairperson Adon Ortega and Adele featured there. Upcoming events, wanted to mention our webinar. So we continue to have quarterly webinars on different district projects and programs. On Wednesday, May 22nd, we're going to be holding a webinar on our South Basin. So we have Bill Lever from OCWD, as well as representatives from DTSC, and then the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So typical attendance for our webinars tends to be anywhere from 150 to 200. And then we get a lot of views as well after the fact. So they'll go to YouTube and watch the webinar on their own time. And then other upcoming events, I believe sent an email about this, but wanted to remind everyone the district is a sponsor of the Water Infrastructure Networking Summit, which is taking place on May 31st. And let me know if you want to attend. We do have a table of 10 at the event that comes with our sponsorship. It's taking place at the Westin South Coast Plaza. Senator Alex Padilla is a confirmed keynote speaker. There'll be two additional panels, and President Green will be speaking on the second panel. And then a lot of the other speaker confirmations are forthcoming. So please do let me know if you would like to attend that. I know I've heard from President Green and John will be attending as well. Then also wanted to let everyone know that because Senator Padilla will be down for this event, OCWD received a request from his office for him to tour a PFAS treatment facility. So we are accommodating that and lining a PFAS treatment plant in Santa Ana, which is very close to this event venue. So we will be providing that tour as well right before the event.
John will also be speaking.
Oh, you're going to be speaking, John?
I
It's the first I've heard of this, but I, if necessary or requested, I will.
Big media hound.
I will confirm, let you know, John. And then finally, I wanted to mention that we'll be bringing this to this committee this summer, but we are taking a look at, we're closing out the Children's Water Education Festival, and we'll be bringing the budget to the committee. But we're also at the same time, you know, once we stop the event and we start planning right away for the next one. So we had some challenges at UCI, and we are definitely trying to work with them and have early meetings. And I know Director Weigand has been great in facilitating communication and getting a new contact for that. So we are looking forward to still working with UCI and seeing if we can bring down cost. But the other factor with UCI is that they did let us know there's a planned construction project in Eldridge Park at the time when we'd like to host festival, which is during their spring break. So we're just proactively looking for additional locations. I think Public Affairs has kept an ongoing list of different locations that we have explored throughout the county. So we dusted that off and looked at about 60, and then we kind of made a short list of these seven here. So in fact, Danny Birch, who leads the festival, she's at Oak Canyon Park right now. So we are really exploring in detail these seven locations: UC Irvine, Huntington Beach Sports Complex, Mile Square Park, Oak Canyon, the fairgrounds, the Great Park. And we also did, we went out and visited Ben Smith, and we took a look at Warner Basin to see if it is possible to host the festival over, in OCWD's property near the recharge area. So we will be coming back to you and bringing our kind of findings of each of the venue and recommendations, but just wanted to provide advance notification that we are doing this, and we'll bring some more information back. Well, that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for Gina at this time? Okay. Hearing none. Thank you, Gina, for the update. That was excellent. All right. I believe all these items will be placed on the consent calendar. Are there any director's announcements or reports at this time? Hearing none. Mr. General Manager, do you have any announcements or reports at this time?
Just a reminder that our two committee meetings next week, the Water Issues Committee and Admin Finance Committee, they have been canceled. I think everyone got an email, but just a reminder.
Okay. And I believe with that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much. Have a great day.